From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 265 with guest Stephen Murawski, recorded Monday, May 14th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio. And with me today is Stephen Murawski. And Stephen is a senior Windows system engineer for EdgeNet and a Microsoft MVP in PowerShell. In this role, he supports a dynamic infrastructure that pushes the boundaries of the Windows platform. Stephen is a founding member of PowerShellMagazine.com, an online publication dedicated to PowerShell content focused for the system administrator, developer, and DBA. Stephen also heads two local user groups, the Greater Milwaukee IT Pro User Community and the Greater Milwaukee Script Club. He speaks regularly at local user groups and can be found at various conferences, which is where I always see you. It seems like I only ever see you at conferences. I didn't even realize you lived in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I normally get to bump into you at like TechEd or something along those lines.
Yeah, any one of those technology shows. Are you coming to TechEd this year?
Unfortunately, I will not. I had to make some choices about conferences. Spring's a busy time for me, and we have a new baby, and so I had to make a couple of choices. I chose the PowerShell Deep Dive this year.
Okay. Well, congratulations on one hand, and very wise move to take care of she who must be obeyed.
Yeah.
You know, you can't leave them alone all the time. First child?
Yes, it is.
It gets easier. Don't worry.
It's been great so far.
Yeah, it is good fun. The mine are teenagers now, so the dynamic's a little different.
Yeah, good deal.
Yeah. So, PowerShell version 3, this is only in Server 2012?
Well, it's Server 2012. It's there natively, and then there is a beta out currently for Server 2008 R2, Windows 7, and Server 2008.
Nice. And we know that Microsoft get things right on the third version, right?
Yeah, that's usually the pattern. So, you know, we've gotten some pretty good stuff out of the PowerShell team with version 2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Version 3 though is a whole nother ball game.
Really?
Oh yeah.
And you're saying that in a good way, I hope.
Oh yeah, definitely. The things that I found that I don't like about PowerShell version 3 are really nitpicky.
Mhm.
But the good stuff in there is game-changing. It's totally changing management for me personally, my environment.
But, you know, so real thing to speak about is, what did you not like in V2?
You know, remoting, it was awesome that we got it, but it wasn't very flexible and it wasn't very durable. And, you know, it definitely wasn't SSH.
Well, it was a V1 feature, right? Like, it was pretty brittle.
Yeah. And that's completely come back around. Now it's extremely robust. It can deal with network disconnects. You can disconnect and reconnect sessions.
Nice.
So I can start work off one machine, disconnect the session, come back, and then reconnect to it from another complete and pick up right where I left off. And it makes the remoting feature much more of a viable, consistent management.
Right. Well, the same way, a tool we just forget about using it, but it works because it works so perfectly, is RDP. Right? Just works. You know, I can drop a session, open it on another machine, you know, bap, 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 never think about it at all. So it's good to see PowerShell headed in that direction.
Yeah, RDP as a management tool, though, is just evil.
Well, yeah. And this is you get to the reality, which is if you've got to remote into the machine to get to its console, you're already in trouble.
Yeah, it's a great feature. It just doesn't scale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, management nowadays is all about scaling. You know, we all have fewer and fewer, you know, resources to do the administration, but we have more and more machines to deal with, and virtualization just, you know, loaded the number of machines that we have to deal
with. Oh, yeah.
So you have to scale your management. And, you know, the command line and scripting and automation, that's the way that happens.
So maybe we should run down the sort of hot feature lists really, what's the difference here in V3? What's the overall focus?
Well, the overall focus is scale out management. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of enhancements in the product to deal with that. The remoting stuff we just talked about, where they enhance the durability of the sessions and the, you know, the ability to disconnect and reconnect. But there's also features in remoting now for delegated administration. One of the tough things to do in version 2 was to set the delegated endpoint where you could say, okay, these junior admins, they can connect to this point and act under credentials that have more rights than they normally would
right.
for certain tasks.
I see.
Now there's some tooling around creating these endpoints, setting them with an admin credential, but locking them down to just a handful of commands that they're going to need to use.
Oh, so now how granular is that lockdown? Is it a particular object group, like an Exchange set or a SQL set? Like, how granular are we talking?
We can go down command by command.
So you can actually say this guy gets these four commands, or I guess the more logical way here is this guy can run this script, which needs these features.
Correct. And you could say, you know, you could say you can go by user and do role-based access control, or you can go by access point or mm-hmm. by entry point and basically say anyone who I give rights to connect to this endpoint, because each endpoint can have custom ACLs.
Right.
Whoever can connect to this endpoint is going to run under this user context, and they have rights to these five commands or this particular module so they can deal with Link or deal with Exchange or and you know, these handful of commands out of the Exchange module.
Nice.
And they're not going to get language mode, so they can't do custom scripting. They can only run interactively the commands that we say they can, whether it's a native command or whether it's a script that you provided. And you have much more control over the environment that they land in.
Nice. And it's true, like I said, it's true delegate administration here, that because he was able to connect to that endpoint, he gets delegated these particular sets of privileges.
Yep. And there's a nice side effect to this.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you deal with PowerShell remoting, there's a credential issue.
Right.
And it's because it's hosted in a service, unlike RDP, which we just mentioned, where it creates a full user session around your connection.
Yep.
When you're connecting into PowerShell remoting, you're actually hosted the WinRM service on the box. And there's a, you know, the Windows security model says, hey, services can't just go willy-nilly and hand out your credentials everywhere.
Right.
You have to specifically do a couple of things to enable a service to pass off your credentials. And there's a number of commands, especially in the Exchange and the Link and clustering and Hyper-V modules, where they need to pass on your credentials to something outside of your immediate PowerShell session.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so delegated administration gets around that because now you're running a service under the user's account that you delegated that account to.
Right.
That you set up for that account. So now we get rid of that second hop authentication issue that we dealt with.
Yeah, you don't have to create a new authenticated entity on the machine you're trying to get to, especially when you talk about automating the script to make it run. Say I literally want to walk across a dozen machines. If you were doing it without delegation, you'd be recreating, calling to AD for each machine. Like, that would slow things down horribly.
Yep.
Ah, okay. So, delegation makes a big difference here, especially for performance.
Yep. And, you know, and one of the other nice little features around remoting is they made it easier to get information from your current session where maybe you've done some prep work and populated some variables or created some objects. It made it easier to get that stuff into a command that you want to run remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they just give you a little syntax around it. You do $ using colon and you give it your variable name. And so PowerShell remoting knows to grab that from your host session.
Oh, interesting.
Before, what you had to do is you had to create a parameter block inside your remote command and pass it arguments.
Right.
And so there was a little more ceremony around it. This is just a nice little feature to make it easier to reach out. And then you also know when you look at the code, hey, this is actually referring back to variables from my host session.
So there's a bi-directional communication going on between the hosted session and the remote session while executing. All right. So you get this idea of sort of that management console entity. Again, when I think about the real power of PowerShell, it's writing scripts that enumerate a group of machines on the fly and then act on those machines as a group, you know, iteratively. And that, to me, seems hugely powerful to have that common host across all of those. You can figure out what you've succeeded at, what you failed at, you know, sort of gather information together and propagate that to the next machine along the way.
Yeah, it's hugely beneficial when you're talking about scaling out your management.
Mm-hmm.
And now talking about, you know, resilient scale out management, this is probably one of the marquee features for PowerShell version 3, and that's workflow. Now, this is a V1 feature, so there are some rough edges.
Mm-hmm.
But the capabilities it provides gives you the ability to have long-running resilient activities that can persist past server reboots, service restarts. If you hit a major failure, you can have this persist to disk so you can come back later and fix it and pick up right where you left off.
Wow.
And in the provisioning and configuration management game, that's huge. You know, and it's got all the capabilities of PowerShell remoting, so not only can you do the, you know, target a workflow at one machine, you can target it at 500,
right.
1,000. You know, it just scales right out.
Well, and yeah, you're clearly pushing against some issues I've dealt with where it's like, all right, I push this set of requests, classically an update to 500 machines, and 460 of them, it just works. And yep. 40 of them, something went wrong. You get fairly useless error messages. You don't know exactly where it failed and so forth. And generally, you just have to go run the script on each machine individually and watch it execute to see what the failure was. And now,
right, or you might have, in one of those steps, something you can't run a second time without, you know, mangling the state on that box.
Right, right, yeah. It's getting that unrecoverable state.
Yeah, there's going to be certain changes you make that you don't want to try to make again.
Yeah, yeah, you can't just reapply it.
Yep, there's a nice thing with workflow. It's workflow foundation under the covers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're reusing that investment. They didn't have to create their own workflow engine or anything along those lines.
Nice, because this thing is all dependent on .NET.
Yes, yeah. PowerShell version 3 runs on .NET 4.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, it actually gets a lot of benefits, including workflow is one of them.
Right.
But it now will spend a DLR.
Oh, interesting.
And that is huge from the performance standpoint.
Yeah. And then for those who've never run across a DLR, this is a dynamic runtime library. And this yep. was originally created for Iron Python, but also for Iron Ruby. But it's just this, you know, when you look at really the language, the behavior around PowerShell, it's a very dynamic language. And so, yeah, it makes sense to me that DLR would become an important player in there.
Yeah, it actually makes the story for developers a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it provides a better interop story. So hopefully that's going to encourage more developers to start embedding PowerShell in their application.
Yeah, interesting point. Yeah, if you loved working in Lisp for your management, you know, that, you know, another dynamic language, that would be a great thing to replace Lisp.
Yeah, Lisp, or, you know, you see this approach on the Nix side of things in a lot of cases where you have, you know, tools built up with the scripting engine
yeah.
side. You know, TickleDK is a, you know, common example you'd see embedded in all sorts of places. You know, a lot of your Cisco stuff has Tickle in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you see these scripting engines embedded everywhere, and it'd be nice to have a nice consistent one that admins are familiar with.
Yeah.
In more applications.
Well, yeah. And especially third-party products. I mean, it's interesting to think about that. If we could get to a place where, you know, I went into my managed switch and it spoke PowerShell.
We can actually get to something like that with this release.
Oh, really?
When I heard this feature explained, it took me a little while for it to really sink in the implications.
Mm-hmm.
But Server 2012 has a pretty good coverage in command lists. There's about 2,400 command lists in the box, across all the roles and features.
Right. And we're just talking about what's built into 2012. We're not talking about Exchange or SQL Server, IIS, I guess IIS is technically built in, yeah. Right?
Yeah, IIS is a role. So that, but with that kind of coverage, That jumped up from about 400 on server 2008 R2.
Wow.
When you add all the Roku features. Well, the reason they got that dramatic amount of coverage is because they came up with a command source adapter, and they implemented it for WMI. And pretty much all the Microsoft products that, WMI has, its reach into just about everything.
Sure.
And so they implemented this command source adapter and targeted it at WMI to give us a reference implementation of how this gets used. And then there's some XML documents that they have, CDXML files, that they use to describe how to map a PowerShell command to the WMI API.
Wow.
And so when you import a module that has these CDXML commands in there, PowerShell creates proxy commands for all those described functions. So it's mapping the WMI calls behind the scenes for you, and now you have PowerShell coverage.
And that just hugely lowers the bar for implementing PowerShell against your app.
Right. Now, here's the mind-blowing part. This job source, or the command source adapter, is not specific to WMI. It's an API that anybody can implement.
Really?
So that means if you have a Java-based management app, or something written in C++, or something running on your network switch and some custom, some custom language.
Yep.
As long as you can implement this API and have stuff talk back and forth, doesn't matter the protocol or anything else, the command source adapter would handle the communication. You can provide a front end PowerShell PowerShell management option.
Wow, that's amazingly powerful. What does the language or the syntax look like? Are we still making commandlets, parameter lists, or are we just like passing block strings? I hate to say it, but I immediately jump. Is this DDE or is it COM?
No, this is the commands that are generated are PowerShell commandlets, and they're generated and implemented by the command time. Whatever they're running behind the scenes is going to depend on what that job source adapter is.
And sure.
That would actually be implemented in .NET because it's going to plug into the PowerShell runtime.
Right.
But it's only that thin layer that has to do the interpretation back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing here is not having to re-implement all the WMI API calls.
Right. Then the hard work becomes figuring out what your nouns are going to be with verb, and then your verbs for your gets, your sets, your adds, and getting those things to map up to your API. But that's a mapping matter, and there's a tool that you can use to actually generate some of these XML files, so that they've automated or they've at least put some tooling around doing that. And it makes for an interesting experience, and I'm going to be very interested to see how that develops. I'd love to be able to reach out to my switches and to my firewall.
Oh, yeah.
And script out or my blade centers or my larger servers that have management partitions and be able to manage the hardware directly on the box. Be able to consolidate that all into one management language would just be huge.
Yeah, hugely beneficial. Like to just think about the script to, really evil stuff like dealing with firewall configuration for a given app, that it could all be just part of the PowerShell script. You don't have these separate processes. Like, all the times we've come up with crazy technologies to try and circumvent those issues, and that would be the solution.
Oh, right. I'd be able to get rid of, I've got some wacky scripts that go out and parse firewall configs and wrap SSH calls to go out and do updates and things just to kind of streamline some stuff in, adding firewall rules in my environment, because it's kind of the command line for the firewall is kind of a pain. So
yeah.
Wrap some common functions. But if they would implement a command source adapter, a lot of that pain goes away.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess the question is, or do we still have to incent each company to do this, or is this something that could almost be done third party?
It could probably be done third party as well.
Yeah.
As long as the technology you're going against has some sort of API.
Has a published API. Think about what's happened with Wireshark and technologies like that, where the community's just taken over and created all the plugins you need for just about anything. And it, you know, we could go, we're, it feels like we're setting ourselves up for that path that you could suddenly, you know, just everything could be plugged into it. And it doesn't matter what you want to talk to, it's all there.
Well, yeah, I think once this, you know, API kind of gets finalized and it's out to RPM and the community gets a hold of it, I think you're going to see a lot of developments along that line. Mm-hmm. PowerShell community is a great community, and there's some really smart people in there, and they love digging in into doing and doing stuff like this, and just, you know, doing crazy stuff with PowerShell that you wouldn't expect it to be able to do. And there's probably a CodePlex project or a script out there for it.
Without a doubt, yeah. Anybody talks to me about PowerShell, it's like search first, man. Don't work from scratch. But I got to say, one of the reasons for that is, writing PowerShell from scratch isn't that easy. It really does lend itself to a cut and paste behavior, that you go search for somebody's implementation of something and you can usually adapt that to what you want to do.
Well, it depends. And, you know, if it's a solution that goes and reaches into WMI or COM or, mm-hmm. or .NET, where you have to go kind of outside of native PowerShell commands, then yeah, then it does lend itself, you know, some copy paste, you know, editing and that. But in the case where, you know, you're writing PowerShell by hand and working with something that has a well-designed PowerShell API, mm-hmm. you know, PowerShell Management API, then it's really not so much that PowerShell's hard to write. It's PowerShell it just takes a little time to get used to the way of doing things,
right,
and the idioms around PowerShell. And once you have that figured out, then anything that exposes native PowerShell commands becomes really simple to script around.
But it's one of those things I think you definitely need to practice routinely to get smooth, yeah, at it. I find myself not doing it often enough, and I have to go and read for a while, get back into it again. I've even, you know, hey, you ever had that experience? You go back, look at your own script and go, so what was I thinking here? I know this works, but, you know, what does it mean?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, that comes down to, you know, like you said, having time in and putting the time into doing it and getting comfortable with the language and with using it as your commands prompt, mm-hmm. and, you know, just doing general day-to-day stuff out of it. And that just keeps, you know, some of that syntax right fresh in your mind. And, yeah, it definitely can help you become a little more fluent.
Yeah,
but you know, with PowerShell, and that's the same with any language. You know, I do a little bit of C# development,
sure,
and I find that when I haven't done it for a while, and I come back and you know, this worked in PowerShell. Oh wait, no, I got to remember I need semicolons at the end of every line, and yeah, just some things that you know you don't bump into in some of the other environments you're in. So yeah, there's you know, the things that you don't use every day or, you know, once a week, they can require a bit of a refresher. And fortunately, there are tons of blog posts, tons of sample scripts, tons of, you know, tons of community contributed projects that can give you a jump start in many, many areas.
For sure. And obviously you've been involved in that community for the very early days with stuff like PowerShellMagazine.com and the like. It's just amazing how much there is in the way of resources up there. Are we actually starting to see some V3 stuff show up? I mean, we're still in the consumer preview phase of this, right?
Yeah, there's actually been a good amount of V3 content that's been making its way out and amongst the various blogs and resources and communities around PowerShell. I myself have been a little hesitant to put too much out there because I remember with version 2, a lot of the stuff that referred to the, you know, the early CTPs and everything.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff changes. There's potential for change. And, you know, I remember a lot of times finding stuff on the CTP when I was searching for V2 RTM, you know, the released version, information. So I'm a little more hesitant about putting a lot out there on V3. But talking conceptual stuff about what's going on with V3, I think is a definite win because PowerShell team is very community responsive,
mm-hmm.
and we want many people, you know, as a community, we want as many people to get their hands on the bits, poke around, see what they like, what they don't like, and get that feedback back to them. You know, now we're a little further along the development cycle, so, you know, it might be stuff that more on the line of vNext. But if there's, bugs or implementation, stuff that's going to block implementation, we need to get them that information before this is RTM.
Well, and it does feel like we're going to be able to get ourselves in more trouble with PowerShell now than we ever have before. This whole workflow side of things, I can imagine, what would you consider long running? Like, I could see you setting up a workflow that runs for days, maybe almost in a supervisory or a monitoring role. Like, you always want it running on that machine.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible. And, long running, it's got the capability to persist to disk.
Yeah. And survive a reboot. I think that's the big, to me, it seems like long running means surviving reboots.
Yep. And service restarts, because this is running in a service that's hosted on the machine.
Right.
So if you have something that, would cause a service to restart, you need to be able to deal with that too.
Yeah.
And very often it's a reboot that's restarting your service, but you need to be able to handle in those type of situations.
Yeah, being able to shut down the engine you're running in, and then when you bring it back up, it picks up where it left off.
Yeah, and what's very nice is, there's a cost of persisting to disk.
Mm-hmm.
So the PowerShell workflows give you the option of whether you want to persist after every activity or whether you want to persist just at particular points, and you can specify where you'd like it to persist. So if there's a section you don't care gets run time and time again, you can let that happen and not take the hit of writing the disk all the time.
Right. Definitely it's an exception circumstance. It's, bad's about to happen here. We better get to disk.
Yeah. And, for provisioning activity, I don't see any problem in persisting to disk after every activity because, those couple of bits, that little bit of performance hit that you're going to take,
mm-hmm.
I'd rather just make sure everything happened discreetly and not have to kind of guess as to where things left off or get errors when I try to reconfigure something that's already been configured.
Well, and just having a sense of what the failure modes are around a given piece of code. It's like, hey, there's no reason you couldn't just run this again, so why do I need to persist? It'll recover okay. If you get shut down in the middle of it for whatever reason, it's not the end of the world. There's such a thing as getting, and somebody's going to abuse that save to disk feature. You get too paranoid. It's like, save everything all the time.
Yeah. And, I think the tricky thing that's going to be with workflow is these are Windows Workflow Foundation workflows.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just PowerShell.
Right.
It's not just workflow, but it's a hybrid of these two things. So, to declare a workflow, it's very much like declaring a PowerShell function.
Yeah.
But you use the keyword workflow. But everything else looks very much like your function.
Mm-hmm.
It is not as simple, though, as taking and swapping the words workflow and function.
Yeah, I bet.
There's good, there's going to be some intricacies there and some differences in the experience of putting together a workflow. And understanding scoping is a little different mm-hmm. than it is in a PowerShell script. And so is, so is how you have to call commands. You can't use positional parameters in a workflow. You have to declare which parameter you're filling out. So everything's got to be named. So there are a couple of differences. And then once you get into the runtime, how it actually behaves running is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as we get closer to RTM, you're going to start seeing more and more stuff. There's actually been a few posts on the PowerShell team blog, and a few other people have posted some stuff around workflow. But I think as we march on and more people dig into this, you're going to start seeing some posts about what the gotchas are and what you need to come up with a good workflow.
Yeah, keep yourself from getting into too much trouble with it, because it does sound like you get pretty tangled up. And I've always felt like PowerShell's fairly tricky to debug anyway, so I got to imagine a long-running workflow is going to be tough to debug as well.
Well, and this could be, due to a lack of familiarity with language as much, but, the error messaging that PowerShell gives you is usually pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a fully qualified error ID, which is not localized, and so when you hit one particular error, you will always get this non-localized, fully qualified error ID, which is a great search term. The set the Second thing is you'll get the location in the script or in the command that you ran that bumped into an error.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of tell you, hey, this is the last thing that we could really parse validly, and you might want to start looking there for your error.
Yeah.
And they do a pretty good job of, you know, pointing to where you're going to have problems. Now you do need to be familiar with, you know, and be able to pick up and read a PowerShell script. I think PowerShell scripts personally are pretty readable, but I've been doing this for a while, so I could be a little biased on
mm-hmm.
that. But they do try to point you to, you know, as much as you can, you know, to where you might have issues. And the error handling capabilities in PowerShell, at least, you know, starting with version 2, with having a try-catch family blocks, mm-hmm. and, you know, just the ability to catch and deal with immediately errors around particularly troublesome bits of code really helps there.
Yeah, sure.
Rather than just having a top-level trap statement.
Well, and you get into, you know, what is sort of the best practice here when you're dealing with complex PowerShell code? It's, do I check to see if I have the privilege, or just try and do something and let it fail if I don't have the privilege? Or, you know, if I need to get something for a particular resource, do I check to see if that resource is there, or just try and fetch it and see if it fails? And you know, I don't know if you have any opinions around right ways to do those things.
Yeah, and, you know, in part, it's independent of the commands you're using. Some mm-hmm. commands handle they'll handle that error better than others, or, you know, they'll, if they fail silently, then that's something you want to test for beforehand. And I tend to test those type of things beforehand because I don't want to have to know a lot necessarily about all the commands I'm using. I don't want to have to know if they fail silently or not. And, you know, try to come up with test cases around each of them. So I just assume they're going to fail silently. But if I...
Well, of course, I'm a performance junkie. It's not just silently, it's quickly.
Yeah.
Right? That's the one that drives me mad, is rather than checking to see if we had a network connection, you just made calls to it, and each one of them takes 30 seconds to fail.
Yeah. WMI is very bad around that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Because it's, yeah. And the problem is that all of that conditional testing is ugly code. You
yep.
know, it's not simple to do, but if you're actually concerned about performance, it can make a big difference.
Right. So, you know, you have some commands like, you know, test connection, which returns a Boolean. So, you know, you do test connection dollar server name and, you know, pass along your server name to test. So if you have if test connection, server name, it kind of reads out okay. But yeah, it's ugly code that kind of, you know, clunks things up.
And yep. And so you'd hope that the underlying call would actually make that test for you so that you can write nice explicit calls. The main thing I'm looking for is, did you fail immediately? I'm not right. even going to try and make this call at the network because I don't have a NIC, so I'm out. Thanks.
And that's a design consideration when you're developing commands.
For sure.
And so if anyone here, you know, is developing reusable scripts for people to use, you know, take note.
Yeah, do the hard
if
work.
Fail. Yeah. Do the checking first.
Yeah.
Fail fast, and you know, let give an error that somebody can do something with.
Yeah. You're exactly right. That's the key thing. So, Stephen, we're starting to run out of time here. Is there something we've missed? What do we need to talk about with V3 before we're done?
Well, we've got just a couple other things I'd like to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Scheduled tasks. Scheduled tasks now have native support in PowerShell.
Cool.
So you can, you know, pass a little bit of PowerShell script along, and you have all the scheduling options you would in the scheduled task manager.
Bit by bit, we are putting scripting away. It's all going to be PowerShell.
Yep. And, you know, the scheduled tasks and the workflows and remoting, they all can use the concept of jobs. So the PowerShell jobs infrastructure is now pluggable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, more and more stuff can work with the same idiom of get job, start job, resume job.
Yeah.
You have all the numbers of commands to deal with all the stuff that you have to know stays pretty consistent.
Nice.
And then WMI got a big-time overhaul.
Mm-hmm.
And Server 2012 and with the Windows Management Framework for PowerShell version 3. And that kind of gave you some of these capabilities to do the various SIM commands is what they call them, which is where they wrap them with the CDXML. And SIM is Common Information Model, which is the standard that WMI is based on. Well, you know, we were talking about some of the ugliness in the network connections with WMI.
Sure.
WMI calls, when they move them to being called SIM calls, are being moved over to the WinRM protocol.
Oh, interesting.
So we can start getting rid of DCOM.
Yeah.
And the crowd is
less
wild.
DCOM is good.
Yep. And so that, and that's moved over to WinRM, which is Microsoft's implementation of WS management. So, and that's a DMPF standard that SIM is going to be provided over WS management. So other device manufacturers or hardware manufacturers or operating system manufacturers can, if they're implementing SIM model and doing it over WS management, PowerShell's going to have a native way to talk to them.
That's great. That's really exciting.
Yeah. Standards is good. And there's one other standards item that I'd like to get into that we have. So a lot of developers in the Microsoft stack are familiar with OData.
Yes.
And so now Server 2012 has a management OData IIS extension.
Huh.
And this is a way that you can host an OData feed in IIS and backend it by some PowerShell.
Interesting.
And so you, in a very similar way to you would map, in a way you'd map the WMI calls to PowerShell commands.
Yep.
You'd map PowerShell commands to your OData feed.
Interesting.
And
yeah, a way to have a cleanly internet portable diagnostic report from a machine.
Correct. And you want to know why this is a very nice little feature?
Oh.
Cloud.
Yeah. So no kidding.
Most of your cloud endpoints are only going to be web. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have 443 and 480.
Yep.
So how are you going to expose your management functionality? 443 and 480.
Yep, no kidding.
And so, you know, this is one way you can provide and map to the CRUD semantics, the create, up, read, update, delete semantics of OData. You can put some custom PowerShell behind there. And there's even a way to do it to send calls, to do some arbitrary scripting. Now you can lock it down as tight as you need to. Security is definitely a consideration, but you can, and there's some nice samples out on MSDN's code gallery for implementing some of these OData IIS.
Awesome. Well, Steven, thanks so much for filling us in on PowerShell V3. So it looks like there's some good things out there. Going to move us to 2012 that much faster.
Oh, I can't wait.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for talking to us, and we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.